Hello and happy Tuesday. This is Nancy reading to you today from Your Sun Chronicle. It is August 18th, 2026. Our cover stories by Tyler Hetu, A Life. Beloved Norton Coach leaves lasting legacy. Carpe diem, the Latin phrase that means seize the day, was a mantra the late Kent Taylor lived by every day, serving as a transformative presence for his students and athletes across Norton. The former Norton High track and cross-country coach died Thursday after a prolonged battle with glioblastoma, an aggressive grade 4 brain tumor. He was 45. An outpouring of positive stories and comments about Taylor made the rounds over the weekend as people remembered and celebrated his life. Norton Athletic Director Aaron Summers said Taylor was as good a person as they come, and when it came to his role as coach, he was the best there was in terms of being prepared, engaging, and setting the culture of the program. If you want to get an idea of who Kent Taylor was, you look at what everyone is saying about him. That's who he was. He was a 10 out of 10 in every aspect of life. Just a great person, Summers said. From an athletic standpoint, he was unbelievable. He was incredibly prepared, and all the kids had fun and were challenged. They had a blast and wanted to be on the track team, and kids still want to be. The culture is still there, which is awesome to see. He pushed kids, too, pushed them to do more than they thought they were able to do. The amount of athletes that ended up doing track that may not have done in their freshman year is incredible. He found their calling. Personally, he was someone I considered a friend and was an amazing person. You'd ask every teacher in the school, and that's what they'd say. I think it's the little things he did. He was always involved in things we did. He was just great. Just a huge loss for the community. All the words people have shared, I could keep reading them and reading them because they're all true, Summer added. As an educator, Taylor was just as influential with his students. Norton High English teacher Kim Burkett, who had him as a teacher when she was a student, said Taylor saw her becoming a teacher well before she had set out on that path. When she joined Norton High as an educator, their relationship as professionals and friends grew strong. I never once thought of being a teacher until Kent confidently told me one day that he was proud of it. Proud of me for going to college for education and that I was going to be a great teacher someday, Burkett said. I told him I was only a sophomore and also I didn't want to be a teacher. But the seed was planted. The 10 years or so Kent and I spent teaching side by side were absolutely the most fun days of my life. We opened each other's classroom doors and brought each other coffee when the other was running late. We kept each other's school pictures on our conjoining door and added it to it every year because we missed each other when we had to shut the door. We shared birthday parties since our birthdays were 4 days apart. I'd like to think we actually taught a thing or two to some teenagers along the way. My mom passed away shortly after COVID, so her services were private. Kent showed up, technically uninvited, dressed to the nines, schmoozed with everyone, and was the last person to leave the funeral home because he insisted on putting all the flowers in the bed of his truck. That was who Kent was. We are all better people for having known Mr. Taylor. More silly, more kind, more saucy. I hope to be half the teacher, department head, person, and if I'm lucky, partner and parent he was. What a privilege it was he chose me to be one of his best friends, Burkett said. Taylor was 337 to 165 with four ties as a coach, winning 20 conference titles and several state championships with the Lancers and their talented athletes over the years. Taylor was synonymous with Norton's success in both programs, and that success has continued since he stepped away. The track was dedicated to him in 2023, and his name will forever live on at school through the Kent A. Taylor track, a place where he molded young minds to be thoughtful and engaged, and athletes to be competitive and passionate. When he first got sick and he wasn't there, you instantly saw it. His attitude, contagious positivity, you just knew he brought something more to the school in terms of school spirit and kids wanting to have, and kids having fun. I think about on Fridays, they do music and dancing in the hallways, things like that. They made it a better place to go to work every day. Some of the things we do as educators, being transformational leaders, and the cliche it is, he did it without knowing he was doing it. That speaks volumes of who he was. Taylor is survived by his wife, Kayleen, his children, Vera and Daniel, his parents, Robert and Donna, and his sisters, Heather, Ashley, and Brooke. A celebration of life for Taylor will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday at Russell and Pika Funeral Home in West Bridgewater. Our next cover story is by Rianne Wynn Watkins, Bowls Filled with Purpose. Bowls in a variety of colors, shapes, and patterns set decoratively atop a long table in local artisan Sarah Mott's pottery studio Thursday evening, waiting to be showcased at Attleboro's annual Empty Bowls event. Empty Bowls, a nationwide project focused on fighting food insecurity while bringing together local artisans, allows attendees to pick out a ceramic bowl made by local potters and take part in a community meal. All proceeds benefit local food organizations. The project's motto is Fighting Hunger, One Bowl at a Time. This year marks Empty Bowls Attleboro's 8th local event. It will be held from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, September 19th, at the Newell Shelter in Capron Park. Sarah Mott, a leader of the organization, said the event is not only a fun family event, but also a way to make a difference, even if it's a small one. I just think right now the world is crazy, and you feel like there's no way you can make a positive impact because it's just too big, Mott said. But when we started Empty Bowls, it was like, okay, maybe I can't really change those big things, but I can make a difference right here in town. A $25 ticket, available at the organization's website, includes a handmade bowl of each person's choosing, a bowl of soup from Morin's, 1911, and Russell Morin Catering and Events, and a coupon for a free ice cream cone from Bliss Brothers Dairy. A total of 700 tickets will go on sale, meaning 700 bowls of soup will be served, the most Empty Bowls has ever offered, Mott said. All proceeds will benefit Hebron Food Pantry and the pantries at Murray Unitarian Universalist Church and the Second Congregational Church, Attleboro Norton YMCA Senior Meals, and the Attleboro Area Interfaith Collaborative's Food and Friends Program in North Attleboro. Representatives from all the pantries will be present, and local musician Andy Solberg and his family will provide entertainment. The event will include raffles and plants from Briggs Nursery and will provide, the event will include raffles and plants from Briggs Nursery will provide decorative greenery around the tables. Mott and Donna Bliss, another organization leader, showed off several of the bowls in Mott's pottery studio at the back of the Attleboro Area Industrial Museum property. Some were painted in muted blues and greens, while others had brightly colored flower petal patterns. One was bright pink with a pair of bunny ears that sprouted from the top. Another combined a unique hexagonal shape with a bold spiral pattern adorning the outside. Mott attributed the diverse display to the different techniques and styles used by various artists. You can see it in some of these, a different personality, she said. About 1,000 bowls will be displayed, made by 10 to 12 local volunteer artisans, Mott said. All have at least some pottery experience, some are longtime potters, while others have honed their skills with guidance from veterans. Some work out of their own studios, while others work out of Mott's space. Last year's Empty Bowl event raised a record $198,000, with other donations bringing the organization's total to $210,000. An anonymous donor who has been with Empty Bowls since it began matched donations up to $75,000 last year. This year, the donor is offering a $110,000 match to keep up with the organization's growth. The goal this year is to meet the match and raise $220,000. Mott said she recently expanded her studio, adding a second larger space. As the organization has grown, so have the need for more bowls and interest from other artists. Mott said the small space in her original studio can get cramped when 10 artists are all working at the same table. The new space, adjacent to the Industrial Museum property, coincidentally was a former studio of an artist friend, she said. It offers several more tables, room for multiple pottery wheels, more drying racks, and more elbow room. Local grants cover the cost of moving into and setting up the new space. Recently, the organization also began operating as an official nonprofit. It happened really fast, Mott said, remarking on how much Empty Bowls has grown over 8 years. Every year, it just astounds me. Our next cover story is by Rhiannon Watkins out of Attleboro, more senior housing in city. The developers of Hope Garden, an affordable housing complex for older adults and people with disabilities on Park Street, want to expand by building another four-story, 60-unit complex nearby. The proposed Hope Gardens 2 would house people 62 and older. All units would be income-restricted with two tiers, one categorized as low income, ranging from $47,100 to $53,820, and another is very low income, ranging from $23,550 to $26,910, according to the plan. The need for affordable housing has been an ongoing topic in Attleboro City government and beyond. At a July City Council meeting, Judy Barrett of the Barrett Planning Group in Hingham, who helped develop the city's updated comprehensive plan, cited affordable housing as a primary need. She noted Attleboro has a relatively small number of units, just 6%, on the Chapter 40B subsidized housing inventory, the official statewide list that tracks affordable housing. The new affordable complex would include 48 one-bedroom units and 12 two-bedroom units with at least one parking spot for each unit. Plans include a natural vegetated dog park, infinity loop walking path, open patio, gazebo, garden, bocce court, and EV charging stations. The wooded lot where developers would build most of the project is at Zero Park Street. Hope Gardens also wants to buy an adjacent house at 225 Maple Street and turn it into a boulevard entrance to the property. The proposed four-story building would require a height variance from the zoning board. Jack Jacoby, a Coogan Smith lawyer representing the project, said developers felt building up made the most sense to avoid disturbing surrounding wetlands and sloped land. Jacoby said the building would not be visible from Maple Street because of abundant plantings and a 390-foot buffer between the building and the street. He also said the project would require very little earth removal, resulting in only about 11 truckloads, which workers could remove over a week. Jacoby said a traffic report found the complex would generate very little traffic, with only 6 trips expected during the morning peak hour. Jacoby told the zoning board Thursday evening that the Conservation Commission is asking developers to include shrubs and trees of varying heights in the landscape to replace some of the trees they would clear. Developers plan to apply for state funding in September, which Jacoby says is required because the project involves subsidized housing. He added that approval and bank loans can take longer than they would for market rate projects. If approved, construction could start in 1 to 2 years, because of the long process, Jacoby said, and construction is expected to last 18 to 24 months. In a story out of Dighton by Stephen Peterson, elderly Dighton woman mauled by family dog. An 86-year-old woman suffered life-threatening injuries from a dog attack at her home over the weekend. The woman was flown by medical helicopter to a hospital because of the seriousness of her injuries. The incident took place about 2 p.m. Saturday at the Oak Street home. The family dog, an Australian Shepherd mix, bit the woman several times on the face, the Bristol County District Attorney's Office said. She was reported in critical condition. Another person was home at the time of the incident, and the dog is now in the custody of Dighton Animal Control. The incident remains under investigation. From the City and Town page, this is out of Attleboro by Susan LaHood, police probe vehicle break-ins. An 18-year-old has been arrested in connection with overnight vehicle break-ins in the downtown area. Police say Isaiah Lopes of Attleboro was arrested as they were investigating a series of reported motor vehicle break-ins that occurred early Monday morning in the area of Emory and Forest Streets. A resident in that area called police about 12:30 a.m. Monday to report two males actively breaking into vehicles outside his residence. The caller further reported that two individuals were also breaking into vehicles parked at a nearby automotive repair business. Officers Chris Ulbrich and George Downing Carter responded immediately to the area and upon arrival saw two males matching the description provided by the caller. Officers attempted to detain the individuals, at which time one male was successfully taken into custody while the second male fled the area on foot. Lopes was taken into custody without incident. He was released on personal recognizance Monday morning. Officers as of Monday afternoon were still searching for the second suspect while also determining the number of vehicles that had been entered or damaged and identifying property that may have been stolen. As of Monday afternoon, two vehicles were found to have been entered. The Attleboro Police Department encourages residents in the area to check their vehicles for any sign of entry, damage, or missing property. Anyone who discovers that their vehicle was broken into or believes property was stolen from their vehicle is asked to contact the police to report the incident. In a story out of Mansfield by Madison Dumphy, Mansfield Company gets $500,000 grant. A local early-stage biotech company is one of the 26 startups to receive part of a $4.5 million grant from Mass Ventures. Phage Pro, PBC, of Mansfield, is a biotech startup reimagining bacteria outbreak prevention with rapid-response oil bacteriophage-based prophylactics. This means preventive treatment taken by mouth using specific harmless viruses called bacteriophages to stop harmful bacteria from causing disease before it starts, which is prophylactics. The startup is located inside Mansfield's Bio Incubator at 241 France Avenue, which is a nonprofit organization that helps to facilitate and assist the creation, growth, and success of next-generation biotech companies. Phage Pro PBC is one of three Stage 3 award winners to receive the highest amount of $500,000 each to support critical needs not covered by Federal Reserve grants, including marketing, business development, and intellectual property strategy, helping companies bring new technologies to market and grow in Massachusetts. The other two Stage 3 winners were Bloomer Tech in Boston, which is making cardiovascular disease visible in women at its earliest, most treatable stages, and Mvalon in Woburn, which is commercializing a platform technology that converts greenhouse gas emissions into carbon-negative fuels and chemicals. The funding is being awarded through Mass Ventures' SBIR Targeted Technologies Grant Program, which helps Massachusetts companies turn federally funded research into new products and businesses. START grants provide companies with funding to grow their businesses, bring new technologies to market, and create new jobs in the state. Since launching START in 2012, Mass Ventures has awarded $46.2 million to 157 companies that have employed more than 3,400 and raised more than $5 billion in private capital. The businesses, 65% of which are outside Boston and Cambridge, cover more than 40 locations throughout the state. And in a story out of Attleboro by Stephen Peterson, driver seriously injured in a city crash. A driver suffered life-threatening injuries after he crashed into a utility pole Monday morning. A 19-year-old Providence man, the only occupant, was trapped inside the vehicle for nearly 40 minutes and had to be extricated. Police and firefighters responded at about 8:30 a.m. to the area of West Street and Berwick Road, finding the vehicle heavily damaged after smashing into the pole. While crews used multiple hydraulic cutting and rescue tools to free the driver, paramedics provided advanced medical care, including IV therapy and medications, fire officials said. The victim was taken to Rhode Island Hospital in Providence with injuries that are believed to be life-threatening. Crews remained on scene until about 9:40 a.m. The Attleboro Police Department is investigating the cause of the crash. In Bill Gouvier's column, Thinking Beyond Ourselves, as a citizen and local official, I've always thought that we should leave our communities better than we found them. We protect the people here now and those who will be here in the future. I hope that remains the goal of leaders and citizens today. As an active participant in local government for most of my adult life, I always believed citizens of our country and our local communities have a responsibility to think not only of ourselves, but also of the next several generations when making important governmental and social decisions. If you listen to what I hope is a vocal minority, though I fear it may be the majority, of citizens and voters these days, that may not be the case. The vision of America presented by many today is a more selfish, self-centered country than the one I grew up loving and still love. It seems to be dominated by those unconcerned about what they pass forward, concentrating instead of making sure it remains what they want it to be now. We seem to be fixated on helping ourselves at the expense of those who will follow. Many members of my generation, I'm 70, bought homes long ago and paid them off. Today, they have equity to help protect them in their golden years. They often seem relatively unconcerned that our grandchildren are far less likely than we were to ever own a home. Sure, it gets talked about, but too often the talk is not backed up with any action or votes. Yet this is not a problem limited to the elderly, not by a long shot. On the national front, little has been done to build a better future for Americans beyond keeping today's wealthy in that enviable position. Federal aid to states, particularly blue states, has been slashed. Education funding has been reduced and support for programs for children has been eliminated or diminished. And while the president is building ballrooms, has a new plane he gets to keep after leaving office, and January 6th criminals and rioters just might get to split up to $1.8 billion in taxpayer funds. Locally, we are lucky to live in an area where voters generally support things such as education and public safety. Attleboro has a relatively new high school, and North Attleboro is building one. But affordable housing continues to be an issue, with the role of local government and taxpayers in supplying it front and center. How many times have you seen or heard online statements such as, "They are ruining the rural character of our communities by bringing in these people"? Far too often, the visible symbol of public opinion is to rally against providing actual homes for those without them in order to keep our towns what they were instead of what they can be. America is a country supposedly built on the bedrock principles of freedom, liberty, and leaving a better country, city, or town for our children and their children after we are gone. As I get older, I find myself questioning whether that is still the case. But more importantly, I hope it is still the goal of the majority of us. From the sports world, by Lauren Campbell, Gronkowski to join Pat's Hall of Fame. Rob Gronkowski will take his place among Patriots great later this year. It was announced that the former tight end will be inducted into the team's Hall of Fame on November 7th at Patriots Place Plaza. He will be the 38th member. The ceremony is a day before the Patriots host the Packers. Tom Brady, Gronk's former longtime teammate, will be on the call for Fox for that game. Gronk was drafted by the Patriots in the second round of the 2010 NFL draft, despite his outrageous pre-draft interview. The former NFL star fell asleep after he arrived at the facility and needed to be woken up. "When I did fall asleep, I had an outrageous interview. Outlandish. There's no doubt about that," Gronkowski said in April. "But there is one thing about it. Because I was being myself. At the same time, I called my agent Drew right after the interview. I said, this team either loves me or they just crossed me off their board. And there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. There's absolutely no chance they're drafting me. In the end, they loved me." Gronk spent his first nine seasons with the Patriots and won three Super Bowls, so he was inactive for Super Bowl 51. He retired after the 2018 season due to injuries, taking a physical and mental toll on his body. Before his retirement, the Brady to Gronk connection was something the quarterback relied on. In his 9 years with the Patriots, Gronk caught 74 passes for 1,104 yards and 11 touchdowns. The two won one more Super Bowl together, Brady's seventh and Gronkowski's fourth. This has been Nancy reading to you today from Your Sun Chronicle. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for being here with me.